This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. A very special guest today who has quite a unique resume. He's a member of the Iowa House of Representatives and a current candidate for U.S. Senate. But he's also a pitcher for the Sioux City Explorers in the American Association of Professional Baseball, one of the few elected officials, or maybe the only, who has a baseball jersey in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. J.D. Scholten, thanks for joining us on Sports Jam.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
We're so glad you could join us. To be able to serve in the House of Representatives in Iowa and pitch, you're still pitching for the Sioux City Explorers. How are you able to pull this off?
Well, our legislative session goes from January until about April or May. There's no official end date. Unfortunately, this year it overlapped. The legislative session ran a little bit long, so I was put on the disabled list to start the season until the legislative session ended, and then now back fully with the team. So it's a lot, I'm not gonna lie. Why do one exhausting, all-encompassing thing when you can do two? And so here we are.
But what's amazing, we'll get into the details, is that you came back to this team. They needed a body. And you came back to this team and pitched so well, it just kept going. And now you've been re-signed for another year.
Yeah. So I've been playing. There was about 7 years I didn't play baseball. And after my two congressional runs, I ran for Congress in 2018 and 2020. I wanted to spend more time with my parents, and they live up in Minnesota. And Minnesota has amazing town team baseball. And I used to play up there. I was up there a lot. And so I ended up playing for my old team, Lion Pub Warriors. And every year I would tell the Explorers, I was like, hey, if you need a pitcher, I'm good. They about one time a year in these partner leagues, there's usually a game they just need a body. It doesn't matter. Just can you throw strikes, see how far they can hit it. Hopefully it lands in someone's glove type of situation. And so last year, that's kind of what happened on July 6th when I got a bunch of phone messages when I was volunteering at a music festival here in Sioux City, and that I do every year. And it's one of those things where opportunity doesn't come at convenient times. And I threw a bullpen the day before. I went to the game the night before, had a few beers and a couple brats, and all these things that I would never do. I did a big hit run the day before. I worked out that morning, heavy lifted. I had a beer and a half before the music festival. I don't mention that one too often, though. But when I got the call, it's the call I've been waiting for several years, because I feel I'm pitching the best I ever have in my life. I may not have the velocity I once had, but I'm have great movement. I can locate, and so they gave me an opportunity, and I made the most of it. And so that's why I'm still here.
For those of you that haven't seen the Kevin Costner film, For the Love of the Game, it follows a 40-year-old Billy Chappell pitching in the major leagues. And while it wasn't in the majors tonight, the Sioux City Explorers got a taste of Hollywood when they called on 44-year-old J.D. Scholten to start against Milwaukee. That's right, member of the Iowa House of Representatives and former Morningside and Nebraska pitcher, J.D. Scholten got the nod to start. This wasn't his first stint with the Explorers. Scholten actually pitched for them in 2004 and then again in 06 and 07. The gun at the field was reading him in the low 80s on his fastballs, and off speeds were hitting the low 70s. And his final stat line tonight, 6 2/3, 7 hits, 2 strikeouts, 2 earned runs. And of course, he also got the win against a team that the Explorers surrendered 17 runs to just yesterday. I'd say this was a remarkable improvement. Scholten gets the win. X's defeat the Milkmen 11-2.
At the age of 44, you had a really scary incident that could have been, was life-threatening. The team bus caught on fire. Tell us about how that was resolved.
Yeah, so I actually pitched, that was Friday morning at like 3 a.m. And the night before, I pitched and got my fourth win of the year. And as we get on the bus, my hat was absolutely soaked from pitching. And so I just remember it vividly that I put it in the overhead compartment with my personal hat. And it was my first actual road trip with the guys last year. We had other ones, but I had to join either on my own or different situations because I was dealing with legislative stuff. But this was my first road trip with the boys. I was pretty excited for it. And then all of a sudden, I got woken up at 3 a.m. and they're like, "Hey, there's fire or there's a smoke." We didn't know if it was fire. And then when you got outside the bus, you saw the 10-foot flames and everything. That's when I'm like, "Oh crap! I got to get my backpack." So I went in, got that out. We all got as much out as we could. Hat tip to the Earlham Fire Department in Iowa. It's a volunteer fire department. They were there like that. They saved us from all our equipment being gone. Everything that was up in those upper compartments was pretty much burnt to a crisp. But the stuff below, we were able to manage. And so just grateful for a wonderful volunteer fire department.
So your hat was singed a bit, but still intact. And Cooperstown heard about it. So the Baseball Hall of Fame reached out to you and said, "We want that hat."
So that was Friday morning at 3, the fire department, all that jazz. I carried that and my personal hat off the bus once we could get back and get personal items, once the fire was all done. And my teammate, I was like, "I don't know what to do with these." And my teammate took it and chucked it in the ditch. So the very next day, so the Saturday, I get the greatest email of my life. I get the National Baseball Hall of Fame wants my game-worn hat from the first game I threw. And I just responded, "Yes," but I knew exactly where it was. It was in a ditch in Earlham, Iowa, or just a mile north of Earlham. So our GM came out to Kane County to make sure that the team was doing okay and everything. And on his way back, so that would have been Sunday, I called him on his, he was already gone. And I would call him and go, "Hey, are you going through Des Moines?" And he's like, "Yeah, why?" I go, "Any chance you could stop? It's only a mile off the interstate." And I took a lot of video and photos of the bus fire. And so I could see where like the signs were. And I was like, "I guarantee." And I did a screenshot like GPS. And I was like, "I guarantee it's this area." And he found it just like that. And so we sent it to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. They were excited. And then about a week later, they said, "Hey, it's a little too damaged." I mean, it adds to the story and everything, but it would have tainted the other memorabilia. So they asked if they could send it back and they could get a jersey. And so after the season, and this kind of mixes with my state legislative stuff, when state legislative stuff, I go to Farm Aid every year. So there's the Willie Nelson Music Festival, but there's a whole food and agriculture conference that's part of it. And last year it was in Saratoga Springs, New York. And so I flew in a day early so I could drive out to Cooperstown and hand delivered my jersey. And that was just a surreal but overwhelming, and just never thought I would have a jersey at the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Do you know what it's next to?
It is in the vault. So if you go to visit, and this is a coworker of mine from a decade ago. Is bring his kids play in one of the tournaments in August out in Cooperstown, and I told him I was like, "Hey, you can go see my jersey. Just you can request it." So they prefer that you request it before you get there. So like, let them know like a week in advance because it helps them out. But yeah, that's so. And then it's up to the curators if there's like a exhibit they want to do or something. They'll pull it out. But yeah.
That's wonderful and a great story. Obviously, you were a baseball pitcher and player. You also played other positions too, but before you became a politician. So let's start with this baseball career. First of all, you were a terrific baseball player in Sioux City, Iowa. You attended East High School, and then you attended Morningside College, where you played college baseball as a pitcher and first baseman for 3 years. And then you transferred to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln to pitch for the Nebraska Cornhuskers as a senior. And in 2002, you led the Cornhuskers in earned run average. You graduated from Nebraska in December of 2003. But while you were at Morningside, you played for your dad.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to play at the Division I level out of high school, but I said no because when your dad's recruiting you, it's hard to say no. And so I had a great experience there, did kind of all I could at the Division II level, and that's why for my senior year I decided to transfer to Nebraska.
And obviously, the success you had there with a terrific earned run average proved to you that yes, you indeed were a Division I pitcher.
Yeah, I was definitely a late bloomer, and so I was still pretty raw there. And coming out of there, I knew Like I had to make some adjustments. And so I think that's kind of the fulfilling thing for me was is what's happening now. I'm a far more complete pitcher now than I was way back then. And so my off speed's better, my location's better. I'm not throwing 92 with sync anymore, but I'm still throwing 87 and 85, 87 with sync. So still getting outs.
Set the letters 2-2 pitch. Swing it away, slow spinner away. That thing had some spin on it. And there's out number three. No runs, no hits, man left.
Another great thing is that you have played professional baseball all over the world, basically. You've played baseball in seven countries, obviously the US, Canada, Belgium, Germany, France, the Netherlands, and Cuba. So I ask you, other than the US, what was the best country to play baseball in?
I mean, the Cuba experience was one of the greatest things in my life, on and off the field. Being able to represent your country, and this is before it was opened up. This was back in, I think, 2013, I want to say. I pitched as a 33-year-old in the NBC World Series, which it's mostly college-age people in, down in Wichita. Love that tournament. And we were the lowest. I played for the Northwest Honkers, out of right outside of Seattle, Washington. And I was living out there at the time, and I was 7 years older than my manager, and we were the lowest ranked team to make it to the tournament. So we faced Santa Barbara Foresters, the two-time defending champs, and held my own, pitched decent, but we got the loss. And their coach, Santa Barbara Foresters coach, legendary guy, was putting together a team to go to Cuba to play exhibition games against, like almost like a spring training for theirs. Season. And so I faced Industriales with Yosmani Tomas and several other big leaguers there, and some other teams too. And it was a wonderful experience. But being able to play in the Netherlands was pretty special for me. That was actually just 2 summers ago. So right when I got elected in the state house, I asked what were my obligations for the summer after the legislative session was done, and they told me there really wasn't any. And so I go, hypothetically, I could go play baseball somewhere. And they said, sure. And so I've always wanted to play in the Netherlands because I have Dutch roots, and meant a lot to me. I played all over Europe before, but the Dutch league is pretty special league. And so that was pretty meaningful for me too, especially being 43 and being able to do it.
And the obvious question is, you keep yourself in wonderful shape. So what's the workout regimen for JD Scholten?
I'm very detailed oriented with I lift, but I don't lift too heavy, so I don't want to get injured with muscle stuff. I do a lot of flexibility. I try to eat right, and just I stretch constantly. I don't know if there's one secret. I'm just blessed with a body that can hold up, and the arm. Knock on wood, the arm is hanging in there and the body's hanging in there. And just being able to bless, it's such an honor to be able to play. And I'm grateful for like the Sioux City Explorers for giving me a chance. I'm grateful for the American Association and for everything they've been able to do for this league. I mean, one of my teammates just recently retired, but he played with the Oakland A's last year. This is a very competitive league, and I think a lot of folks don't realize how good some of these guys are in this league. And I'm just happy to they allow me to put on a uniform.
This isn't a handout, though. You've earned it. You've been, this is your third stint with the Sioux City Explorers back in the 2004, 2006, 2007. So it's not, just, hey, as a show, you are still pitching extremely well. So I have to ask you, we're in the age in Major League Baseball where starting pitchers only go 5 to 6 innings now. Back in my day, watching people like, Bob Gibson and Tom Seaver going the whole way, Steve Carlton. The game has changed so much, JD. Tell us about pitching and kind of the mindset of professional pitchers now to be able to throw as hard as you can for so many innings, I guess.
It was really interesting to join the team last year because it had shifted a lot from the 17 years previously I last played with them. Because back in the day, if you threw five innings, you'd be, as a starter, you'd be made fun of for doing a five and dive. And now we have such a good emphasis on having a strong bullpen and strike out guys in the bullpen. I think that really matched up last year when I was a starter. It allowed me to just focus on this, like, do all you can, leave it all out there for just five, six innings. I don't have to worry about that fourth time through the lineup for the most part. And that really worked with me. And we had some flamethrowers behind me. So it was a nice change of pace too. The pitch clock was something different. Like I like it. I work fast naturally, so I'm not worried about ever like it running down on me. But for me, it helps me control the run game because being a tall, lengthy righty, I don't have the quickest moves, and also my age. But what it does allow me to do is mess with the timing of the runners. And so being able to see the clock tick down, like when I come set, maybe I come set at 9 seconds, I'm like, okay, I'm going to hold till three this time, or next time I hold until one or whatever, or I'm going to pick at two. Like there's a whole, for me, there's a whole chess game with that, and it allows me not to just rush and get into a constant rhythm that they can easily run off of.
Has your delivery changed through the years?
I don't have the best mechanics. I know I'm long and lengthy, and there's levers and all that stuff. But I'm more compact now. I was pretty loose back in the day, and I was a kind of a max effort guy, just throw it as hard as I can and let it ride. Now I'm more subdued, and just I try to just keep things as simple as possible. There's still like, I could use my legs more. I could do a lot. My arm path could be a little bit more smooth, but at the same time, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
What is your repertoire right now?
So, a four seam, but it moves because of my arm angle, three quarters arm angle, and because of the distance of these two fingers, my four seam will move left or right. I'll get some run there. My two seam will sink. Change up. Is good, falls my two seam, but a lot slower, and then cutter, and then kind of a slider sweeper situation going on.
Injuries for pitchers, we see it all the time. It's the Tommy John surgeries all the time, and pitchers having to come back. Seeing my Pirates trying to protect Paul Skenes, along the way, and I get frustrated because I know he's a wonderful pitcher. I want to see him go all the way because the bullpen has blown it so much for him. He's got a he's less than a 2 ERA, and he's hasn't even doesn't even have a winning record for the Pirates this year, and has probably the best ERA for four innings pitched. But when it comes to injuries, what advice do you have for young pitchers? Because they want those kids to throw junk early now. Back in the days when I played, maybe it was a curveball, in Little League and American Legion ball, and even in college when I was catching in the winter squad at Penn State, there wasn't that much junk. There was a lot of hard stuff, and a good strong curveball. What's your recommendation for young pitchers out there to stay and avoid maybe a devastating injury?
I think it's different for everybody. One thing that helped me was I split the year in half. I had 6 months basketball, 6 months baseball. And so that allowed different muscle groups to grow. And so you're not just using one. That I think we're losing that because we're getting these travel ball teams are year round and all encompassing and stuff like that. I want to see people. I maybe it is a little old fashioned of me, but like go out and try multiple sports. And you don't have to be great at all of them, but it helps you mentally develop. And if you only play the sports that you're dominant in, that some level you're going to meet a challenge. And so for me, like basketball, I was probably more natural at basketball than I was at baseball, but I can't jump out of the gym. I'm not the fastest person. So I knew I was limited there, but I had to find other ways to compete to make up for that. And so that allows me, like in baseball, to have a different kind of type of mindset and just, but at the end of the day, like, all of that taught me to be competitive, and that's allowed me to be, I feel, a good politician. It's allowed me to be a good representative of the people of my district because I want to be the best and try to give them the best opportunity I can, just like I do in baseball.
It's great advice because I know there's so much pressure on kids today with these travel teams to, as you mentioned, to continue to play with that sport and not to keep going back to when I played. We played as many sports as we could and we loved them all. And we're never pressured to stay with just one sport. So I think that's wonderful advice. Best advice you got from your dad?
That's a good question. You might have stumped me on the best advice. I think just ultimately it's just go out and compete, you know. Just a best example of this, last night our starter gave up six in the first. Not a good start. But then we ended up winning an extra inning 7-0. That was the only runs he gave up, and then our relievers pitched well. And I remember when I was, I think, a freshman or maybe a sophomore, I had a game similar to that where I gave up a lot in the first, and I'm just devastated and just like, but that you can't change that. That's already happened. What can you do moving forward? Can you throw up that donut, that those zeros up there? And he taught me how to compete and just move on to and focus about the next pitch. And I think that is something that mature pitchers I see, especially in this league. Some of the younger guys, they might fold if they give up a few runs in the first. But if you can grind it out to get to that fifth inning, allow your bullpen to have a chance, allow your team to have a chance. To me, that's what pitching is all about.
You mentioned that competitiveness, helped you when it comes to being a politician. What sparked your interest in wanting to be involved in politics? Was there an issue? Was there an individual?
You know, it was my grandmother, and the interesting thing is, like, she wasn't even political. But the last thing that she said to me while she was on her deathbed, and this woman was absolutely amazing. You know, one of my off season, my first off season, the family asked if I could move in with her because she had a surgery, and to help take care of her. Well, I got a job at like a, it was only, I was only going to be there for a couple months, so I got a job at a coffee shop that I had to open up at 5 a.m. And she would have breakfast on the table at 4:30 in the morning, even though I was supposed to be taking care of her. That's the type of woman she was. And on her deathbed, pretty much, she said, "You got to move back to Iowa and you need to take care of the farm." And that hit home, and gave the eulogy at her funeral, hardest thing I ever done in my life. And a month later, I'm out in Seattle and I went to the Women's March and I just felt that raw power and energy. And that's when I was like, you know what? I feel like this is a calling. And so I moved home and I just wanted to get more active. I didn't know what that meant. And I wanted to make a difference, and I ended up that snowballed into running for Congress, and I took a district that nobody thought I had a chance. As a Democrat, Donald Trump won it as 20 with 27 points in 2016, and we nearly pulled off the upset in 2018. Just 2 years later, we moved the needle 24 points, but we lost by three. And it just, you know, it's one of those things where you just welcome everybody into your coalition, and that's the type of campaigning I like to do.
Sioux City Representative J.D. Shulton hopes to unseat incumbent Republican Senator Joni Ernst. Shulton announces candidacy today in a video posted to Facebook.
I'm a baseball playing, Monopoly busting, beer drinking, Bible reading, working class, proud prairie populace who is sixth generation Iowan from right here in Sioux City. And I fundamentally believe that we deserve more than a GoFundMe broken healthcare system, a JBS food system, and a Dollar General economy.
You're one of a few Democratic candidates running for U.S. Senate in Iowa. I've heard you mention that, two of the biggest issues for you, universal health care and also campaign finance reform. Is that still what gets you going?
Yeah, every single day we talk about fight, fix, and secure. Fight for universal health care. Fix the economy so it works for everyone, not just the billionaires and the huge multinational corporations, and then secure a democracy from the special interests and the billionaires that are dictating it right now. So anything we can do to get this government back to of the people, by the people, and for the people, I'm trying to, those are the avenues that I really want to push. And when it comes to universal health care, I mean, part of it, that stems from my experience playing minor league baseball. In the offseason, I've had many times where I had to choose between rent and paying health care when I was in my 20s. And I just got lucky. I didn't have a major injury. I didn't have a major disease that bankrupt me or anything like that. And I just, we're the wealthiest country in the world. I feel we can figure this out.
As we take this, just yesterday was the premiere on PBS of the documentary Caregiving. It's about how through the years, three different times, we've come very close to having a different kind of healthcare system to help out caregivers themselves. And there is a political side to that, but it's a very interesting documentary. So I advise that you check that out, because it aligning with your thoughts that you just talked about, it would be something. And it also has the historical context through the years of
very interesting
about caregiving and caregivers. We had a live panel discussion, and one of the panel members, Chris Durrance, by the way, is the director of that film, and the executive producer is the actor and director Bradley Cooper, who had to care for his father during his final years. But Chris was there in the panel. We also had Dr. Lauren Snedeker, who's with Rutgers Newark. But one of the other panel members was Billy Porter's sister. And so she was a wonderful guest and talked about how she had to care for her mother for 10 years, and actually was a caregiver since she was 9 when her father passed away, and she took care of the family. So a much needed issue that needs more attention is, you know, when it comes to healthcare and caring for those, and thinking about kids who are also caregivers in schools, another part of that documentary. Yeah. So as this dual career for you continues, how much do you talk about baseball with your fellow politicians?
That's a good question. I don't think most of my colleagues truly can grasp what I do, to be honest. And a lot of them, I mean, even the ones who are baseball fans thinks it's cool, but like, I don't think they understand like the level of commitment and everything. I think one thing they noticed, so during the legislative session this year, I didn't have much of a personal life. If I wasn't at the Capitol, I was either in the gym or at a baseball facility training for this season. I threw bullpens at 6 a.m. I threw bullpens at 10 p.m. and everywhere in between, just to make sure my arm and my body was in shape and my mind was in shape for the season. And so, so it's different. It's two completely different worlds. I enjoy both very much.
Technology has changed too in the game of baseball. You mentioned the pitch clock and the pitch com, or whatever they call it, that the catcher and the pitcher can communicate. Well, that took all the fun out of me being a catcher. I loved having signs and worrying about who was on base. And, you know, Manny Sanguin, who you might see his uniform behind me, was my favorite player of all time, the catcher for the Pirates in the 70s, two-time world champion, and best friends with Roberto Clemente, who you see to my other shoulder there. But he used to tape his fingers. He would put white tape on his fingers so that could be seen. Do you have the pitch com?
We don't. And my one of our catchers does paint his fingernails so we can, we can see, which I'm appreciative of, because now that this season I'm in the bullpen, coming out of the bullpen, it's later at night. And so I have a little bit trouble seeing signs in certain stadiums because the lighting's a little different. And so I'm grateful for him for doing that.
All right, you're walking out to the bullpen. What are you thinking? I always wonder what pitchers are thinking when they're making the trot into the bullpen. Are you thinking about the next hitter? Or are you just trying to relax? Are you thinking about having a presence on the mound? What goes through your mind, JD?
Oh, man. For me, my mindset is one, get loose, make sure the body's good. And so I do a lot of stretching. When I think I might have a chance of getting in, I try to make sure that I'm just prepared for that. And then once they give the name and say like, Shulton, get in, get up, you're in two hitters or something, whatever it is. Then that's when the mindset is, okay, locate, everything feeds off the fastball. So locate the fastball, get comfortable with your off speed. And then from the mindset, then running into the game, that's when you're like, okay, this hitter is just going over the game plan in my head. Are there runners on base? Are they, what's their, like, I look at stolen bases are really big, like who's going to run on me? Who's a first pitch hitter versus people who are more patient? And all that thing. So, like, for me, right at this point in my career, it's a chess match, and I absolutely love it.
So this may be a difficult question, but I'm going to ask it because we like to have fun here on Sports Jam. You can only have one. You can't enjoy both like you're doing now. You can either become a U.S. senator, or you get the call from a team like the Minnesota Twins or another Major League Baseball club and said, "Yep, for 1 year, you're going to be a reliever in Major League Baseball," or is it going to be U.S. senator?
I'm going to do a political answer. I'm going to say no comment.
Okay. You are a politician, J.D. Sheldon. A fair answer. Is there one pitcher out there that either today's game or in the past that you've either molded yourself after or have revered?
Revered Brad Radke.
Brad Radke, one out away, one pitch away from having a shutout here and ending Oakland's 20-game streak.
Cleveland has just beaten Chicago 9-7. The magic number is 9. One more out. We'll drop it to 8. Little pop fly. Minkiewicz calls it, makes the catch. The streak is over. Brad Radke with a shutout for career win number 100.
What a great game by Brad tonight. Can't do anything more than what he did right there. His concentration, his focus, pitch count, he kept it down, kept a very powerful Oakland lineup off balance, and comes up with his 100th career win and a career and a shutout. What a perfect night for Mr. Radke.
I was a Twins fan growing up. His 20-game win in, I can't remember what year it was. He won 20 games when the Twins won like 62. I think that's one of the most underrated years of a pitcher in Major League Baseball history. Because to get almost a third of your team wins, I mean, that means you have to pitch well and pitch well deep into the inning. That means your guys have to score for you. Like, there's so many things that go into a win. And for him to have that 1 year, I think it was so special. And that was like when I was a teenager too, like in my formative years and just trying to learn about the game, and he just had a great changeup. So the one jersey I do own is a Brad Radke Twins jersey.
Wow, that says it all there. You have a chance to start a just a relaxing trip, or it could be to start a new rotation. Let's say that you wanted to start a new rotation for a new team. What I'm trying to get at is, outside of family, who would be three people that you would pick, and they can be no longer with us, that you would want to spend time with and to really converse with?
Oh wow.
Doesn't
That's a
have to
great.
be sports either.
Yeah. I'm very interested in the new Pope. So I think that might be one. There's a photographer named Alex Soth out of Minnesota. His work and I feel my life has really crossed paths. I met him just a couple of times, just very quickly, nothing too big, but his work is very meaningful to me. Oh man. And then I for music, I'm being a Midwesterner, so I like Bon Iver. So like I think those three things are all different conversations, but those are kind of folks I'd be interested in having a conversation
You've had the best of both worlds. So
with.
it's something that continues. It's not ending anytime soon for J.D. Sheldon with the House of Representatives, the Iowa House of Representatives, running for U.S. Senate and still playing for the Sioux City Explorers in the American Association of Independent Professional Baseball. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Continued success in both worlds, and we hope to have you back sometime soon.
I would absolutely love it. Thank you so much for having me.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can check out all the past shows at wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Thanks to KTIV News in Sioux City for the news clips, and special thanks to Joe Favorito and Jerry Milani for their help with getting us hooked up with Senate candidate J.D. Scholten. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.